50 years ago this week, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed on the balcony of his motel in Memphis, Tennessee. All this week, we'll take time to reflect on his legacy, what we've learned as a nation, and what we still haven't learned. But 14 years earlier, the Reverend had just landed his first full-time pastorship at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama. And it was in Montgomery that Dr. King met the man who would become his barber, Nelson Malden, of the Malden Brothers Barbershop.
I had a 10 o'clock class that morning, and it was a habit I never liked to cut another head after 20 minutes to hour because I had to walk to class. The Alabama State College was one block from the barbershop. I looked at the size of his haircut, and I sized him up, you know, by me being a barber, so I could knock him out in 15 minutes. And he came in, you know, we got to be very friendly, a little bit. He said that he looked around the barbershop and asked him, what was his name? He said, Martin Luther King. I said, where are you from? He said, Atlanta. I said, what you doing here? He said, I'm here to preach my trial sermon to Dexter. I said, well, good to meet you. So that's how it all got started.
Now Nelson Malden has teamed up with youth advocate Kevin Sherrod to write The Colored Waiting Room. Nelson says, to understand today's fight for racial and social justice, you have to understand King and the South of 50 years ago.
Well, by you born in the South and living all your life, I had nothing to compare it with. So it's just a way of life. You know, your mother taught you how to survive. Your father taught you how to survive. You know, like if that's a problem with Emmett Till, you know, he didn't know how to survive under that system. Each step you made, they would correct you. Like I was in the Cressy department store. And I was going to the White Water Fountain. I was young, couldn't read at the time. My mother just grabbed me by the head and pulled me back. She wasn't trying to make Uncle Tom out of me. She was trying to teach me how to survive it within the system. If you get on the bus, for example, the sign said colored from the rear to the front, white from the front to the rear. Each step you made in life, when you passed a white school, you could see that school looked better than yours. When the police stopped a black man, he was a different reaction to stop the white man.
So this book was born out of conversations that King had with you in the barbershop. The barbershop occupies such a unique place in, you know, black American male culture. Yep. Can you just talk about that for a minute?
The barbershop is the only place that you can truly express yourself. We had no country clubs. We had no organization except the black church and the black barbershop that you had jurisdiction over. So some and everybody met up in the barbershop. See, the person with the PhD, he could go to the white barbershop, don't care if he was a millionaire. So that educated person with money also met the black boys that were changing tires and sweeping the street. So that was better for the environment. Right now, the black community, those educated with money, they move into a so-called integrated section, and they leave a lot of the poor people in the same section.
For you, Kevin, you called this book The Colored Waiting Room, and I know there's a chapter similar to that in the book, but why that name?
The first or second time I went to Montgomery to meet with Nelson, I remember first opening the door to his barbershop, and it's this sign in the back of the room. It said, The Colored Waiting Room. And I was like, wow. It's because I think what Nelson said, like he mentioned, there's no, you know, you won't see a sign on a water fountain that says white only, black only, or segregation on the buses, but you still feel like a second-class citizen in America in some regards. And a lot of people don't understand, like, why. It's almost like a silent death happening right before us. The incredible thing is that we're talking 50 years later, they were still having the same conversations about the brutality of a black man at the hands of a system that doesn't always treat him fairly. I mean, even when you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion in America today, they just have different names. People of color are still being treated unfairly in America 50 years after the assassination of Dr. King.
So I want to turn to you, Nelson. If King were alive today, what do you think that he would be most passionate about?
I think he would probably be more frustrated now, but I think he'd be more passionate about the number of people in prison, especially black, the lack of employment for black men and women, the poor educational qualities, and he'd probably be very disturbed about the nature of historical black colleges. And poverty is still a big factor in America because the people at the top take too much out of the population for medicine and education. Poor white people and black people in the same class, and the ruling class manipulate that system and use the psychology to keep you against each other. Then you end up electing a man like Donald Trump, president.
So, Kevin, what do you hope that people get from this book? What is the takeaway from this book?
The takeaway from this book is connecting the dots then and now. How do you connect the dots between what's going on in America today and what went on in America 50 years ago, right? Because you have this whole it's an activism movement of young people wanting to get involved and engaged in social justice, engaged in civil rights, right? But you can take a lot of the lessons that Dr. King provided 50 years ago and apply many of them today. The 64 Civil Rights Act, right? The 65 Voting Rights Act, the 63 March on Washington, right? To have your voices heard in masses, to show the world that we can come together. And once we come together, we can use that power to move policy and move legislation. So there are a lot of lessons that can be learned from that history. Unfortunately, it's just not being taught in schools today, right? We get the watered down version. We get the I Have a Dream speech, and we get Rosa Parks on the bus, right? We don't get the intricate details, you know, 13 months of boycotting the buses in Montgomery. It forced them to change the policy, right? So in school, we got the watered down version, but we didn't get to intricate details. And I can be honest with you, if I had known more about Dr. King, the civil rights movement, my responsibility as a black man in America, I might have made different choices.
As we wrap up, Nelson, I want you to tell us something that most people don't know about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. What are some of the more intimate moments that you had with him as his barber?
Well, one thing they don't know is how sarcastic he was. So before Reverend King came to the church, he said, "You black people should stop going to the back doors or the white restaurants." He said, "We have enough food established in our community to take care of our needs." So this particular Friday evening in the barbershop, mm-hmm. when we finished cut hair, my boss man said, "Hey, Nelson," said, "let's go down Fairview and get some of that fried chicken." There was a white restaurant, but the black had to go to the side door. You knock on the door, you give the waitress your order, and you pay for it, and you stand on the sidewalk until it's cooked. So that particular Friday evening, we were standing on the sidewalk, and I looked up the street, and I saw this blue Pontiac coming. I said, "Hey, Warren, I think that's Reverend King." He said, "Sure is." So I ran and jumped in the car to keep him from seeing us, because I know what he'd been preaching about. And sure enough, the next Saturday night, I saw that blue Pontiac pull up. I said, "Doggone," I said, "they ain't come." And so when he got in the chair, he said, "How about that chicken?" I said, "How you know that was chicken?" He said, "Some of my members gave me some one time and sure was good." I said, "You better stop eating no white folk food, it's going to make you sick." He said, "I see you pretty healthy."
Sarcastic. That's how Nelson was able to really humanize Dr. King for me in a way that I hadn't been aware of. You know, no book, no lesson I've been taught in school reminds you, he was just an everyday guy that went out and did some extraordinary things for America.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Nelson Maldon and Kevin Sheard, authors of The Colored Waiting Room, Empowering the Original and the New Civil Rights Movements. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
My name is Tom Leeds from Oakland, Illinois. I have a fourth grader, and during Black History Month, I asked her what she was being taught at school, and I was left with the impression that they had hardly mentioned it. I'm white, but I still want her to know about these things, so I'm guessing that she's learning more about MLK at home than she is at school. Sad to say.
Hey, students and teachers, how is the life and legacy of Dr. King taught in schools today? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE.